Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Four Pillar Effect. This is your host Cortez Richardson. I know it's been a while, needed a hiatus, so I took it, but we're back. Today I have a special guest. Her name is Jazz. She is from Austin, Texas, and she is a personal trainer and host of the podcast Bitches Love Sports. Today we're going to discuss some of the struggles women face in the sports industry, as well as some things that Jazz has noticed herself while being a female participating in sports. Let's go ahead and jump right in. How you doing, Jazz?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
I'm good. Good. So if you want, you can go ahead and introduce yourself to everybody who's listening and just kind of let us know where you come from, who you are, what you're doing right now.
Cool. Well, my name is Austin, Texas. As far as what I'm doing right now, I am a personal trainer, and I spend a lot of time training women athletes. A lot of them are roller derby athletes like myself. I am a member of Texas Roller Girls, and I've been playing roller derby for several years, and that's one of the things that really got me into training and also into sports, because in the world of roller derby, it's volunteer-run organizations. So as an athlete, you also have to know a little bit about the business side of sports, which made me more curious about how other sports are run. And that's what kind of developed a passion that eventually led me to hosting Bitches Love Sports. Because, like I said, I love sports, love men's and women's sports. And my co-host and I, we really just enjoy bringing a fresh and authentic approach to the way that we cover sports. So if you ever check us out, you'll notice it's a little bit different than how a lot of women sports anchors and sportscasters and sports analysts will approach the sport, especially on cable TV. But it's uncensored, unfiltered, and I think you'll like it.
Okay. So what do you believe are some of the struggles most women face in the sports world or in the world in general?
Oh man, that is a... Especially if you're talking the world in general, there are so many things. Just so that I don't end up going on for like 3 hours, I'll keep it to the sports world. I think the biggest struggle right now is that the way that they're allowed to express themselves and present themselves in the world of sports and as athletes still does not coincide with the image that the world has of us in general. Even the image that a lot of women have of themselves. So one of the things that comes up whenever we talk about women in sports is the whole equal pay situation. And if you were to unpack that, you would find a lot of sociological issues that date back decades before women's professional athletes were even a thing, right? So using the WNBA as an example, you're dealing not only with the fact that in just about any industry, women are paid not even a fair percentage compared to what men are paid. So women are already paid less. Women athletes already get less attention. But then on top of all that, you have the fact that most of these sports, the men's side has a decades-long head start versus the women, right? Mm-hmm. NBA, we're talking about a game that was invented in the 1800s. By the time the NBA was formed in the 1940s, the game had already existed for decades. And on top of that, the game was established at a time when women weren't, it wasn't even a common thing to meet a woman that worked out and was athletic on her, women weren't thought of in that way in the 40s, right? So men's sports have had decades to develop themselves. And then you fast forward a few decades and the WNBA was just formed in 1996. Long ago, when you think about sports like basketball, football, baseball, which has existed for over a century, right? So the sport is very young, and even though we could like look at that and say like, well, in the NBA, for the first NBA players weren't being paid that much. A lot of these guys still had summer jobs, side jobs, whatever. But it's like, now we actually have a blueprint for how to run a sports organization. So what's the problem? Well, one, time is still an issue. And two, it's still that idea that, you know, people are trying to take sports fans and make them fans of women's sports instead of properly marketing women athletes. So you're dealing with the history of the sport that's already established. You're dealing with a lot of the established sports they have been able to build upon generations of fanhood and participation. So like the guy will play basketball and then his son plays basketball. So then you have a house that loves basketball. But like, let's say for someone like me growing up, I in love with basketball. I was watching Dennis Rodman and Michael Jordan. The WNBA did not exist. So we're really reaching the first time in history where the WNBA can capture these young fans. And so it's like everybody wants to see these changes for women's sports right now. And we're looking at all the attention that they don't get and the money that they don't get as a sign that it's not set up to be successful. But really, it just has not been given the amount of time that the men's sports have. And it hasn't been given the attention that men's sports have. And also, women just in general are viewed differently. People want to keep women in a box. And the things that get men attention in sports are things that naturally attract people to men. Masculinity, aggression, competitiveness, being muscular. Mm-hmm. That same thing doesn't apply to women in sports. So you have to be a little bit more creative in marketing. So men have an advantage in that as well, in the fact that they can naturally be themselves in an athletic setting, whereas women, you have to be a little bit creative to make it palatable for people, for the masses, right? And okay. so just in general, I know that's like a lot to unpack, but just in general,
that makes sense.
That women, yeah, the obstacles that women have to face are related to not only the current image of women and how people view women, but just also the history of women in this country and the ways that we've had to, like, we've ended up with kind of a slow start when it comes to mm-hmm. sports.
Right, and definitely sports specifically. I can definitely see a lot of the points that you brought to the table, especially when you were talking about women expressing themselves. Do you think that women get a negative connotation when they express themselves as being dominant or masculine, or, you know, the showboating that males have in sports versus, like, if women were to do the same thing, that's kind of fun?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the biggest problems happens, right? If you actually watch women's sports, you can see it. I watch the WNBA and, you know, I see them beat their chests and, you know, make faces mm-hmm. and talk trash. But when you watch highlights of a game, you never see that side presented the way that you see with the male athletes. And why? It's because the powers that be don't find that appealing. They don't think that's marketable, so they don't market it. But the truth is, there are people who love that. There are people who would love to see it and love to watch it. But the narrative that's been created is that women don't do that. So the people who actually would be attracted to the women's game marketed to, because the people that control the image of the women athletes just aren't comfortable with putting that out there. So it affects them. It's like here in Austin, we have a women's rugby team. That's a contact sport. We have a women's contact football team. So not like the lingerie football league that a lot of people are familiar with, but this is like a more traditional form of football, right? So we have that. Flat track roller derby is a contact. I see competitive women all day, every day. Aggressive, athletic, competitive women who are willing to take it to their opponent for the sake of having an exciting game. They're so competitive. They want to win. They talk trash. I've seen fights almost break out on the track, everything. But when it comes to marketing, everybody's so afraid to put that out there. Everybody is so afraid to present this version of powerful women, right? We're used to seeing powerful women like superheroes or entertainers. These women who are very powerful, very independent, very assertive, but they're also very sexualized. And sexuality that I think makes people more comfortable with it, because that's the part of women that they're familiar with, right? But when you remove that, and it's like, now these women are just athletes. These women, you know, they might be sexy to you if you're into that kind of thing, but you can tell it's not intentional, right?
Right.
I don't know what to do with this. Right. You might come off as a little bit too much of a bitch. The average male, you might make him too uncomfortable because you're so aggressive and so assertive. So we can't put that out there. Like, it definitely sets women athletes back. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, and you brought up that last comment you made about, like, the average male. I was going to ask, do you think that that's because most men are intimidated by confident, strong, because that's what I would think, is that, you know, when you go to a round table and you're discussing like how we're going to market, you know, the opposing sex, you think that a little bit more intimidated themselves with the idea of having a powerful, outspoken woman who is going to say certain things that, you know, I guess you could say a traditional or typical female in today's society would not say. But then you do see, you know, these other come to mind, like Venus or Serena Williams, who they, you know, granted they're in a different realm, they're in the tennis world, which I would argue is a little bit more, I guess you could say professional, but they do kind of show that that dominating presence when they do win, you know, in the past years and things like that. So I guess it's a little bit opposing, but I definitely understand what you say and what you're saying about the masses. Like, it's not as frequent in women's sports across the field, like with all sports, like for instance soccer, like you said, basketball, even swimming, like with Michael Phelps, like the way that victory is celebrated is kind of more tamed in the domain of women when they do it. So do you think that's because of the perception of men being intimidated to a certain extent? Do you think that the average male is just not ready for that in today's society?
Yeah, so I'm gonna unpack a couple things that you just said. So like, one, you know, bringing up Venus and Serena, you definitely brought up the right names, because a lot of people think that the issues that they dealt with are because of their race. And don't get me wrong, the issues that Venus and Serena dealt with in their sport have a lot to do with their race. But I also believe that had they gone in and been more timid and a little bit more subdued and not been so unapologetically Black and assertive, and just like when they win, they expressed it in a very dominant fashion and they were showing off. Like for a while, Serena's celebration, where she never said it in these words, but I think of Beyonce songs where she would be like, twirl on your haters, right? Mm-hmm. And Serena would like do this thing where she would wave at the crowd and kind of twirl around after a win, just showing off, just like, yes, I beat you, and yes, I'm proud of it. Like, you know, not the time to be sportswoman. Like, this is time to show off. I just did something difficult. I accomplished something. Right? So that definitely plays a role. And so to address what you're saying about like men being intimidated, and does that affect how celebrations are displayed? I think once again, it affects how they're marketed, because I'm a person that watches a lot of sports. And I actually see all kinds of celebrations among men and women. I see men who will hug each other and smile and high five and be happy. Other times they're beating their chest. You know, they've got that grimace on their face like, you can't F with me. And I see women do the same thing, you know. So both sides are celebrating in a variety of ways. But I do think when it comes to marketing, that even though a lot of these women aren't even heterosexual, and they themselves really don't care how the average man perceives them, when it comes to sports marketing, everybody thinks that they need to appeal to the average man. About women of color, nobody is thinking about queer women and what really captivating that audience could do. It's like the average dude doesn't find this appealing, so we can't put it out there. So I do think it has a lot to do with that. But I also totally sure that we have an accurate understanding of what the average man would be intimidated by. I do think there are be intimidated by it, yes, but I don't think that it's such a turnoff and so intimidating that it would be detrimental to market women in a different way. Because while yes, there are some men who just expect to be turned on by women, and it's like, that's your job. I think there are also some men who just enjoy watching a good competition and who just enjoy watching competitors. And once they have the opportunity to see that there are some absolute rock stars in the WNBA or on the women's soccer team or even football, their perception would change and their interest level might change. But everybody's so afraid to try it, you know?
Right. Yeah, and I know one of the stories recently that came up, and one of the female athletes that I like watching was Sha'Carri Richardson, the track, the new personal track sensation. And I know she's gone through a lot with her mom, and she tested positive for marijuana, and she's kind of, you know, she's very outspoken, and she doesn't try and put on a front for the media at all, which I definitely like. But what, I don't know if you follow track at all, but what do you think of that whole situation with her?
Well, Sha'Carri? Yeah. Sha'Carri's rise was so interesting to me. I hadn't heard of her before the Olympic trials, but when I saw her, I first saw her on Facebook, and there were just so many Facebook comments on that post, which makes sense because controversy is what generates engagement, right? Usually when people feel neutral, somewhat agree or disagree, they're less likely to actually comment than if they strongly agree or disagree. And the people who strongly agree are less likely to comment than the people who strongly disagree. So it's usually like somebody will see something, and then once that person who strongly disagrees says something, then those people who strongly agree have to come to the defense. And that's what creates that engagement, right? And what was interesting with the case of Sha'Carri Richardson was because before she even spoke, just her appearance was causing that controversy. Just right. Her appearance as a woman and the debate over whether or not it was acceptable for her to present herself this way as a woman, the color of her hair, the length of her nails, the fact that she was in eyelashes, you know, and it's something that happens a lot in the world of women's sports, just like, you know, getting so distracted by the appearance as opposed to what the athlete is actually doing. But the people who really loved her, they were very drawn to her appearance. I remember people saying things like, she kind of looks like an anime character with the color of her hair, which she did. If you ever watch anime, and a lot of anime, you can tell who the main protagonist is because they usually have distinctive hair, you know? And I don't know if that's why she did it. I doubt it. But I loved it. As a woman, one of the things that I've learned is that there is something about being unapologetic that unlocks a level of confidence that you will never experience until you have the security and the support to unapologetically be yourself. And then once you find into that part of yourself that's like, I am not concerned with what other people think about me or how they feel about me. This is how I want my hair to look. This is how I want my nails to look. This is how I want my face to look. And this is how I want to dress.
Right.
The feeling is literally indescribable. And I think that's because for so many of us, we are raised from a very, very young age to be so conscious of what other people think and the impact that that might have on our lives, you know? Right. And so to see another woman do it, and to do it on such a huge stage, the Olympic trials, you know, she could have been like, well, I'm representing my country. You know, I need to wear my hair this way. I need to cut my nails. I shouldn't wear these lashes. But she was like, no, I'm going to do this and I'm still going to be the best in the world. There's nothing right. about my appearance that stop me from being the best. And whether you love it or hate it, you numbers don't lie. Look at my time. I don't care what you think about hair or what you think about my nails. Look at my time. There's nothing you can tell me because my time is my time and me being the best and that's it, you know? And then when she started speaking on top of that, it was like, oh, she even presents herself in a different way than most of the athletes that we're used to. Even more controversy on top of that. So I definitely, I athlete, not only because she's a dominant athlete and she's great at what she does, but I think even if you don't follow her example in the sense that a woman would dress like her, if you follow her example in the sense of confident in what you do, regardless of the things that are adjacent, and by adjacent, I mean things that aren't directly related to your performance, like your speech and your appearance, just learning to be confident in what you do. Let's see, the great producer rap Timbaland said in a song once, he said, he said this, and she said that, and he said that. Timbaland can't rap, but I don't care because I do this and that. I'm making bounce and wiggle, and I kill on the track, or something like that. It wasn't Here We Come. His point was, and that's what I do, and so I don't care about the people who say I can't rap. That's adjacent, right? Like, whether or not you think I can rap, at the end of the day, I make hits, and that's all that matters, and there's nothing anybody else can tell me, and that's kind of like, what she does. And I think more people need to do that, especially more women. Forget the haters, focus on the people who love you and what you're doing, and grow that crowd. Because put yourself out there because you're afraid of who might hate you and who might not agree with what you're doing, you'll never reach the people who love you, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, even for males, I think that's hard because, you know, there's certain stigmas, especially like amongst the races. And I'm not saying that anybody's at more of a disadvantage than other people, but that is definitely the case in some cultures. But for sure, like, I do think that women have it harder in the aspect of like the social media realm. Even like when you think about women's MMA, right? Like female MMA fighters, usually like I typed in women's MMA hype right now. And one of the first things that pops up is who is the hottest MMA female fighter. And this, like what I typed in, has nothing to do with sexual appearance, but you know, just justifying your points of what you're saying, it's like women are looked at to be feminine, to a sense, I guess you could say, or like they're supposed to present themselves in a certain type of way, and that's how they get their attention, versus working really hard and getting attention through their numbers or data, or you know, the analytics that they produce over a long period of time. And I think that goes like very, very, I guess you could say that we are underperforming as spectators while women are overperforming to be spectated. So what do you think about like that, even that point where we're talking about like a combat sport, and that's still not like, even when you look at two males who are about to get into a boxing ring or an octagon or whatever it may be, even leading up to the fight, you know, the press conferences and things like that, I can even see that there's a difference in the way that speech is being, you know, portrayed from women to men. Like, it just seems like it's all across the board, even with a combat sport that is supposed to be aggressive and is supposed to be a very, very competitive sport. Women even aren't thriving in that aspect. So what do you think is, I guess you could say, the bridge between where we are now into getting to that point to where there is no discrimination, regardless if it's race, sex, gender, or whatever?
Well, that's an interesting question. As far as why things are the way they are now, we live in a patriarchal society, you know, and for most of human history, the characteristics that we associate with masculinity were necessary for survival. So, you know, aggression, you know, the willingness to fight to protect what it is that you care about, being able to intimidate predators, being able to intimidate other people in your tribe, all those things were necessary and therefore looked at as strengths. Whereas more feminine trait, being nurturing, you know, if you look at evolutionary biology and you go back, I don't even mean generations, I mean millennia, to time periods that are written about or studied, I should say, where human beings lived in tribes and they were very wary of other tribes because there were limited resources, right? Things like being nurturing, caring, considerate, leading with your feelings could literally get you killed. And although our society has evolved in the way that we live, if you read evolutionary biology, you'll know that there are a lot of things that have not evolved as far as how our brain functions. So there are certain things that it will trigger our amygdala, our fear center, that we don't necessarily have to have anymore. And so that's what we have to navigate. But for that reason, I don't necessarily see a period where there is no discrimination. But what I do foresee is a time period able to be a little bit more flexible and use a little bit more of our logic when it comes to how we navigate these situations. So I talk about a patriarchal society and how it affects women. It affects men too. You know, I spend a good amount of time on social media, not only looking into sports, but also just looking into just social interactions between the sexes. And one thing that is coming up a lot these days is the need for men to go to therapy and the fact that men grow up and they don't know how to process their feelings. And sometimes it leads to something as benign as a failed relationship. They aren't good communicators, so they might fail at a relationship. But in more extreme situations, it leads to things like depression, loss of a career, drug addiction, suicide, right? And it stems from this idea that men fall victim to as young people, that you shouldn't express emotions. This idea that you're not supposed to talk it out when you have an issue with your partner. You can maybe cheat on them, in some cases maybe hit them, in some cases maybe abandon them, but communicating, what? Nah, like men don't do that. Talk about your feelings, what? So it's like, even though we sometimes want to look at the ability to subdue our own feelings as a strength, it can be harmful. And so that's just one of the ways that I think living this way affects men. And I think as we start to realize that this, you know, right now it does feel like a war against femininity, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it feels that way because in a lot of ways, women are losing. But I think once we realize that while this may be presented as a war against femininity, the way things are structured doesn't actually benefit anybody. And we all have something to gain from reevaluating how we function in this society. I think that's where we'll really start to see a difference. And social media plays a big role in that. There's a lot of bad that comes along with social media, but some of the good is in the fact that people of different demographics are able to communicate with each other more fluidly than ever before. I'm in social media groups with people where they're like three generations in one thread talking about a situation. Generations younger than me, generations older than me, and of course people in my age group all looking at a situation and commenting with their perspective. So you've got people with a lot of life experience and people with very little all conversing on the same topic. You've got that can now see conversations between each other because, you know, on Twitter, for example, you can see what's happening on a hashtag, your friend's tweets. And so now we're able to, even if I tweet, you know, Black Twitter, my white friends can see it. You know, if I tweet bitches love sports and our audience is now, but men who follow can see it. If I'm retweeted, men can now see conversations that were held behind doors now. Women can see conversations between men that were held behind closed doors. Same thing with Black and white and different age groups. And I think as we start perspectives more and more, and change happens generally generationally, it usually doesn't happen quickly. Like our parents will teach us something and then it's up to us to either change that belief or pass it on. And so that's why change happens generationally. So it's not gonna happen overnight. But I do believe that being able to see each other's perspective and communicate those perspectives and talk about those differences is going to lead to a lot of change and a lot of benefits for humans as a whole.
Right, 100%, 100% agree. It definitely takes time, especially with that mass change when you're talking about the whole world or even a region. It's definitely gonna take a while, but you bring up an interesting point about the social media being a very good gateway. And I think that has kind of brought a lot of things that were in the dark to light. And I'm very, very happy for it. That's definitely the positive thing about social media. But we are coming up on your time frame. I know you had some other things to do. So if you don't mind, we can reconvene. If anybody who wants to listen to part two, if Jazz is up for that, we can do that and kind of finish this out. I usually go for an hour on these podcasts. But if you want to, go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you, where they can listen to your podcast, or any personal trainer info that you might be putting out, or Instagram.
Sure. I'm definitely down to be to do a part two. So whoever's listening, just make sure you keep an eye out, follow this podcast so you can catch that part two when it comes out. To find me, you can find me on Instagram at Fleur de Lethal. That's F as in Frank, L-E-U-R, D as in dog, E-L-E-T-H-A-L. You can also find Bitches Love Sports on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, and some other places right now. And if you search the hashtag Bitches Love Sports on Twitter or Instagram, that's probably the easiest way to find us, since we kind of had to edit our screen name.
Got you. Yeah, even that's the issue. I can see that. Well, I appreciate you so much for being on the show, and I look forward to doing a part two with you. Everybody, thank you for coming, and thank you, Jazz, for being here with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Have a good day.
Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Jazz. She is a very interesting person, if you did not notice. And if you're looking for part two, that should be coming out in the next 1 to 2 weeks. So continue to follow the Four Pillar Effect on Apple Music, Spotify, Pocket Cast, or wherever you may listen to this podcast. Also, give us a follow on Instagram at the Four Pillar Effect. Effect is spelled with an E. So once again, thank you guys. Really appreciate the support. If you have any questions or any topics that you would like me and a guest to talk about here in the near future, please DM us at Instagram, the Four Pillar Effect. Hope to hear from you guys soon.